And so what we've tried to do is have these behaviors of what does it actually mean to be results matters at work? Like, what does it mean? But I think the behaviors are helpful and useful for coaching. And so I think core values are so critical. I was talking to a business owner yesterday that doesn't have them yet. It's like, come up with the core values, but then the behaviors, I think, are just as important because just the core value itself feels really nebulous.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. Today's conversation is one I think many founders and leaders can relate to. My guest today is Shannon Badger, and she's the co-founder of Badger CPA, a firm that she built alongside her husband from what started as a simple side hustle into a thriving accounting and advisory firm serving complex businesses across multiple industries. But what makes Shannon's story so interesting isn't just the growth of the business, it's the intentional way they're approaching their culture. From defining core values and behaviors to implementing systems that reinforce accountability, clarity, and trust across a growing team. In our conversation, Shannon shares what it really looks like to build a company while raising a family, how their leadership team uses EOS to create role clarity and accountability, and why translating core values into observable behaviors can make the difference between values that sit on a wall and values that actually shape how people work together. Let's dive into this conversation. Okay, welcome back to the Culture Coach. I am so excited to have Shannon with me today. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. We're going to have fun.
Me too. I'm so excited. Well, before we got started, I shared with the audience a little bit of an intro about you, but I'd love for you to take us back to 2009. What was the founding vision for Badger CPA?
My husband and I, at the time, we were living in Houston, and my husband's very entrepreneurial by nature. So he had started business in high school and was doing sales and things in college. And so he had really encouraged me at the time and had challenged us as a couple to sort of have a side hustle outside of our corporate jobs. And we were right out of school. We were newly married. We were trying to pay off debt. And so we set up an LLC back in 2009, and we started helping some kind of family and friends with small projects in corporate. And really the function at that point was just to side hustle some extra money, pay down debt because we were young and dealing with college debt and all that fun stuff. And then over time, we were finding more and more of that work and we were enjoying it. And then we were fortunate to be able to move back to San Antonio. We had our corporate roles here in San Antonio and just sort of continued to build out that concept. And then it was in 2014, actually. So we were doing some of this testing for a while. And in 2014, I was expecting our third son at the time and was struggling just with the corporate structure of the timing and daycare and navigating all of that. It was just hard being a young mother. And so Jonathan had also gotten a really wonderful job opportunity. So it just made sense at the time where I could step away from my full-time job and pursue this more. And so that's what we did in 2014. So in 2014, I left my corporate job. At the time, I had a part-time bookkeeper that was working for me on the side, and I was helping with a small business bookkeeping, tax, things like that. And so just continued to do that on a part-time basis with our kids at home. And so I think a lot of it really was fueled around personally, like wanting to pay off debt, be financially independent, and also wanting more time with our kids. So it was such a simple, like, I'd like to say we had some big grand vision at the beginning, but we really didn't. It was like, we want time with our family and we want to be financially stable. You know, it was as simple as that.
And when did your husband step away and join you full time?
He joined January of 2015. So it's actually pretty quick. So I left my role around June of 2014. Was fortunate that we were able to like get some business in and things like that. And then in 2015, he and I just got together and said, you know what, we want to put out our shingle. We sent out a letter to our family and friends. It was like, we're you know, taking the plunge. If there's anything we can help you with, you know, tax, bookkeeping, payroll, anything, we would love to help. And then we were fortunate that our third partner, Crystal, joined us the summer of 15. So within a year, all three of us were there. And I feel like we've just been able to build something really cool together over time. And now we've been working together over 10 years and we're all like family. It's just been really, really fun and exciting. It's been a wild ride, but like an adventure for sure.
That's awesome. And I read in your bio as well that you guys do EOS, like you, mm-hmm. It isn't just the CPA, but you're also helping them small businesses with the EOS platform. Is that correct?
Yes. So we implemented EOS ourselves about 5 years ago. And then we work with an implementer who we love. His name is Rod Smith and he's phenomenal. And we believe in the structure and the framework of it. We think it's hugely beneficial. I would recommend business owners to start using it. Even if you only have 5 to 7 team members, there's something very powerful about nailing down your key functions and your seats on your bus and understanding the roles. Because I actually think a lot of small businesses get tripped up in role clarity and KPIs mm-hmm. and accountability. Building a framework for that is just a challenge. So I think EOS really gives you a roadmap for that. But I do some consulting with clients around their EOS implementation. So I'm not a official implementer, but we do have some clients that we've sort of helped them stand that up as well. And then I think since we've been running on it so long, I kind of have a pretty good handle on how it works now and can give feedback and coaching. And sometimes we understand their business really well since we're usually sitting in kind of their CFO seat. So it works out really well for us to facilitate those meetings because we understand, you know, a lot about their company and how it works.
Yeah, I love that. It's so decades ago, I ran a different small business with my husband and we were involved in the Entrepreneurs Organization EO and learned the EOS system. And so what I love about it, because, you know, culture is my sweet spot, it really kind of helps lay a foundation for, like you said, what are the seats that you want on the bus and then the right people in the right seats and really the role clarity, which all feeds really is the foundation for, I think creating an intentional culture. And so I want to ask you a little bit about the culture at Badger and really how did it, you know, did it evolve as you grew? Did you guys start out by defining core values early on? How did you form the culture inside Badger?
I think at the beginning, because it was really small, sort of had kind of that family feel. Just when you're in business with your spouse, it just forces a lot of alignment and a lot of conversation. And honestly, we struggled with that some in the early years because our work styles are very different. And we were trying to think through, like, what's our vision? What are we trying to do? And so we had to be really clear about what are the values that we want here? What are we trying to do? And then we knew we wanted to build a firm where family was important and it mattered because that was a big motivator for us. And we knew that was important for our team too. So not just our family, but the families of the people that are working here and trusting us to, you know, make a great environment for them. And so we wanted to build something sustainable that was a high accountability culture that like did really excellent work while also valuing family and family time, which is a difficult needle to thread in the public accounting mm-hmm. space. Public accounting can be known for burnout and just really fast pace. And so trying to figure out how to do excellent consulting work and have this like very kind of high accountability, hard charging public accounting while also not overloading people where they could still spend time with people they love. And we've had, I think, seasons where it feels like the pendulum swings one way or the other. We're like, oh, this year it's like very people oriented, which is a great thing. And then this year was a little more like client and getting after it oriented. And so I think sometimes you're trying to calibrate a little bit, like we want to stay in that sweet spot where it's really benefiting everyone equally in kind of that good tension. But it's, you know, it's hard for it. It doesn't always feel perfect. There's years where it's like, man, I think everyone just busted their tails and we need to really make sure we're hiring and having enough capacity so people can have more time with their families. So it's not a perfect science by any means. So I think the family focus has been a big part of it. And then my husband and I, we're Christians, we're believers, and that's a big part of how we operate as well. And so just wanting those values to be part. And so we certainly don't require that everyone have a relationship with Jesus to work at the firm. But like for us, I think it speaks to the integrity with which we work and the core values of the company. If you're in alignment with that, then you'll be hugely successful here. And just wanting to do the right thing, love people well, operate in high integrity, things like that, that we just really weren't willing to compromise on. So
that's great. And I, you know, one of the ways that I define culture or an intentional culture is that it's not just what you reward and recognize, but it's those values that when something else is happening that may feel more important, you know, what are you still holding true to? Because a lot of times when, you know, if maybe business starts dropping or there's, you know, a people crisis, it's easy to forget about the things that you say are important. So it's really those things that even when there's something else going on, you're still holding people accountable to these things. I'm curious if there were any decisions that you made along the way that you believe really helped shape the culture.
The one thing I think that's helped is that we break down like core value behaviors, and that's something that we realize that having core values and then just trying to grade on like, are we meeting core values? Yes or no? It's like, well, do you have humility? And I think most people would say yes. Or are you people first? Most people would say yes. So then it's like, okay, well, if you're people first at work, what does that mean? And so all of our core values now, we have behaviors that are associated with that. So people first could look like showing up on time and prepared to meetings, because people first is being considerate of all the other people on this call. People first could look like smiling and being just generally like pleasant to be around and like optimistic and like how you communicate. Like that could be people first. And so I think that different organizations could define those differently. And so what we've tried to do is have these behaviors of what does it actually mean to be results matters at work? Like, what does it mean? But I think the behaviors are helpful and useful for coaching. And so I think core values are so critical. I was talking to a business owner yesterday that doesn't have them yet. It's like, come up with the core values, but then the behaviors I think are just as important, because just the core value itself feels really nebulous. Like if it's mm-hmm. like, well, you're not being people first, they're like, okay, like, you know, so I think just making things measurable, and that's probably the accountant in me. It's like almost everything in business, you can measure it somehow. I was talking to a client the other day about, you know, well, PMs in the field, it's really hard to measure. And it's like, I think we can measure, because you can measure if they're on budget, you can measure client satisfaction scores, you can measure, you know, there's lots of ways to make things more clear for employees. So I just mm-hmm. think the less ambiguity you have, the better.
I agree. I love that you talked about behaviors. The framework that I use when I work with clients, it's called CORE culture. And the CORE is an acronym, CORE. And C is that clarity. You have to define your mission, your vision, your core values, and the behaviors associated with those core values. And then I even also say that the leaders, C-suite, definitely founder, CEO, what is your leadership philosophy? Like, you know, how do you want people to show up from a performance perspective? And so really getting clarity and then operationalizing it. So taking those behaviors and weaving it through how you hire, how you attract, how you measure performance. The R is reinforce, where you talk about rituals and recognition. So how are you reinforcing those behaviors across the organization? And then the E is evaluate. It's that measure. And because I also agree that, you know, what we measure gets managed, and you can look at absenteeism or obviously turnover, things that are going to be a leading or lagging indicator of whether or not your culture is driving the right behaviors.
Absolutely. What I love about that is, and we've been talking about this a lot as a leadership team this year, is trying to create systems and frameworks so that the system is the bad guy. Like, let the system be the bad guy. Have clear reporting and clear metrics where it's like, you're either green or you're red, and like where people can see it and they know if they're winning. Like, no one should ever wonder at work, like, am I winning? Yes or no? Because if they don't know, it's like, that's not fair. Because you could be sitting on something like, man, I've been real frustrated about these things. But it's like, if we're not communicating that and they don't know, like one of the, I think, meanest things that can happen in work is if somebody gets terminated or let go or something, and they had no idea it was coming. And I'm like, that's a failure on the organization's part. And we've made that mistake before. So like, we've done it before where we did not communicate clearly. And I thought it just felt awful. It was like, we will never do this again. Like, we need to have clear expectations, clear coaching. Like, by the time it gets to that place, like, we should be on the same page with the employee that like, what we're doing is not working. We're not winning. Or it's just not the right fit here. And that's okay. Like, sometimes the nicest thing you can do is to remove somebody from the organization if it's not the right fit for them, so that they can maybe go thrive somewhere else. Like, if they're not going to thrive in your org, you're not doing them a favor, having them just be frustrated permanently, because God's got a really wonderful place for them, because everyone has talents and skills and they can contribute that to a different organization. And that's okay. Like, not everybody will be with your company forever. And so I think just, that's a shift that has to happen over time. When you first start a business, it's all real personal and you struggle with the, you know, the relationships of it all. And I still struggle with that some. It's not like you don't have feelings, but it's like having a framework of, you know, what sets someone up for success in this organization, and having conviction that that's okay. And if that's not the right fit for them, that's okay. Yes. And it actually is honoring to move someone out that isn't going to fit long-term. Like, that's okay. So anyhow, I got on my soapbox for a little bit, but I just feel real strongly about that stuff. I think it's really important.
I agree. And I think, I've shared this before on the podcast, but I was at Rackspace, a tech company in San Antonio, for about 10 years. And one of the mottos was that every employee just wants to be a valued member, of a winning team on an inspiring mission. And at the end of the day, that's what every employee wants. And so if you're not clear about what the value they can bring to the team, and they don't know, you're taking away from the benefit that they can gain by feeling like they're a valued member of that winning team. But I also think, mm-hmm. like you said, that I talk about intentional cultures, and I've been a part of organizations where those values of that organization aligned with me, and I've been a part of organizations where I didn't align with the values of that organization. There were people there that did align with those values, and they were a good fit. I wasn't a good fit. It wasn't bad on that organization. It was just not the right fit for me.
Yeah.
And so when you can be clear with those values and what's important to you as an organization, it allows the employee to even self-select, you know?
Yeah. I feel like we course corrected one time too far. And then in interviews, I feel like we'd almost like scare people away, because we're like, we're serious about this stuff. And
yeah.
If you don't demonstrate these things, like, I promise you will not be here in 6 months. Like, we mean it. We take it real seriously,
yeah.
You know? And then it's like, but the right person, when you're kind of giving this lecture on like, these are the values, this is the behaviors, this is what we expect. And you're like, and I promise you, if you don't fit these, like, you will not be here. But the right person would get like amped up about it, because they're like, that's awesome, because I want to work at a place that takes this stuff seriously. Like, let's go. And then and then it was like, oh, like, you know, and then some people would be like, that's a little intense, like, maybe not the right fit. And the reality is, like, that's okay. Like, it's a great thing if people just opt out at the front side, instead of, I think sometimes owners were like, please come work with us, this place is awesome, we'll make it whatever you want. Or like, we try to water it down because we're trying to recruit maybe somebody talented, or we, you know, think that they'll bring, you know, contributions to the team, but we almost don't want to be too intense with like our expectations and our values, because we don't want to scare them away, because we want them to come. But, you know, if you're more clear on the front side and they do opt out, that will save you a lot of headache later than, you know, trying to entice them in. And then 6 months down the road, you're like, man, they don't meet our values. This is a problem. So not putting like the skill level or the technical skill of someone over and above like the core value fit. And we've made that mistake too. It's like, I think a lot of this, I feel so strongly about it, because we've probably made every mistake under the sun we've made. Like, oh, this person has really great technical depths. Like, we need a real good technical accountant. Like, let's do it. But they don't meet the values. We aren't really sure. It never works out. It's just like never a positive thing. And so I think hiring for culture, yes, they need the skills to do the job, but that culture fit is more important, because some of those skills can be trained, but that culture aspect is so much harder to train. Like, if someone isn't naturally like winsome, people first, they're not going to probably be able to change that. It's going to be very difficult. Mm-hmm. Or if they're not naturally high ownership, if they're kind of blame other people, that's a hard thing to coach. Like mm-hmm. accounting technical skills, like we can teach that. And so we're trying to have intent around that, you know, and I think every year we recalibrate, even in our hiring, like what's working, what's not working, how can we make this better? Our head of HR is phenomenal. She's just like a culture champion. And so her role is just a blessing. I view her as like the gatekeeper, because I love everybody. I'm like, I think everyone's the best. I'm like, everyone's great. I think I always just see the best in people. And that's just like, I love people. So it's rarely that I meet someone where I'm like, so I'm not the best like gauge for that. But I also think it's like, know thyself and like put someone in that's like really gonna focus on those core values. Cause I tend to be like, this person seems amazing. Bring them in. So I just think there's processes you can put in place to set you up for success there.
I agree. And I'm curious, it sounds like you're doing a great job on the front end, but is there any challenge that you guys had to overcome or a moment when your culture was tested and you kind of learned from that?
I think that it's kind of cyclical, even in the market with like hiring. And obviously since COVID, it's been just seasons where it's like, you know, I'm going to call it employer or employee centric, which I don't mean it to act like it's two competing forces, but it's like, you know, right after COVID where everyone's switching jobs and employers are all kind of fighting over people. And then it kind of goes the other way where there's not a lot of jobs and, you know, there's more employees than jobs. And so I think it just sort of shifts. And so I think the challenge is to like hold that line and that standard no matter what, because in seasons where it's maybe more challenging to hire because of the market or whatever the factors are, it's like, we don't want to lower our bar because we're having a harder time finding people. And we've also talked about hiring similar to like our sales pipeline. Like we need to be always meeting wonderful people, and it might not be now, they might not be looking, but I've had lots of people that I've invested in relationships for years that eventually came over later. Like we have a wonderful team member that just joined our team last year. I've been trying to hire him for a decade. So it's like, viewing the long game of like nurturing, similar to like a sales funnel, I would argue that as a CEO, like recruiting talent and talent development is like one of the most important things you can do. So I will always take a coffee with a controller or CFO. I will always take a coffee with like a wonderful tax person. If it's not now, that's great. I made a new friend in the industry. That's a good thing. But like when we're ready, I have like a large network because I've been investing in that network for years. And so and I think I'm a people person naturally. So I love getting coffees, but a lot of that, there's no end game. It's like, just meet wonderful people. So I think creating it, like building it like a sales pipeline where there's got to be activity and intention, not just like, oh shoot, we need to hire someone like yesterday. And now we're desperate. And now we're going to lower our bar. And then we're going to pay for it a year later, because we're going to be turning that role over and starting all over again. And like, we've all done it. Like all business owners have done that. We've done that. Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to be in that position again. And then also you might have to say no to work, or not now to work, because if you can't hire to get it done and you're not willing to compromise, you have to say like, man, we would really love to work with you, but like, we can't truly onboard you until May or June. Or we have a client right now. We're like, how can we ramp it up slowly while we're trying to find the right talent so that we can get what the client needs done in the next few weeks, but we don't think we'll have capacity until April or May. Like that's okay. And so I think some of it is an operational discipline. Like we're not going to be desperate just to bring in revenue. We're not going to deviate from like our hiring practices just because it's hard to find people, and just kind of holding that line. But it's easier said than done. Again, like we've done it, so we're not perfect in this regard, but that's like what we're trying to ingrain in us. It's just like, we won't deviate. You know, if they're not the right fit, it has to be a no.
The fact that you're aware and that you're aware of that cycle that happens and that you're treating it like, I love that you know, kind of comparing it to your sales cycle and always having a pipeline, is the way that you're going to continue to get great talent. So that's That's awesome. I'm curious how communication, you know, it's obvious that you're very passionate about your company and your values and the culture. I assume that your husband is as well. Yeah. How do you guys communicate to reinforce behaviors and make sure that the entire organization, especially as you grow now over 60 employees, how does communication play a role in the culture for you?
We have very like fixed rhythms, and a lot of that is thanks to EOS too. So like our communication rhythm right now is that we have like an all hands with the team quarterly. We go over all the things, what's going on. Our COO also has an all hands with all the managers and up every month, which I think is great because they get to hear like operationally, like her voice and her priorities, what's happening. And I think those meetings have been really good for the leader alignment in client service specifically. And then we also started an internal newsletter monthly that we put out to the team too, that goes over like all the other things going on in the firm and what's happening. An area of improvement, I think, for me personally, and this is something that I want to work on this year, but I just have to be braver, is like, it's very comfortable for me to brag on my team because my team is awesome, with you on this podcast, like very comfortable talking to my friend, telling them all the things. And then the second you put me on a camera to just talk to my team about how awesome they are and do like the rah-rah thing, it's like, feels very intimidating. And I think part of it is, I have such an incredible team and so many amazing people in the building that it's so like humbling that they would work here. And I get emotional talking about it. Like they can work anywhere. Like we have the most incredible team members in the building and it's just such a gift. And so I think like sometimes it's like the fact that I have the privilege to be able to lead them is just like very humbling, but it's kind of intimidating because I'm like, who am I to like tell all these wonderful people like where we're going and what we're doing? And so I'm trying to be braver in that regard and do more communicating with the team. And so I've been like, I don't know if I should send like a weekly memo or a video or what I'm going to do, but it's like, they need to hear from me more. Like I know that that's important because I am super passionate about what we do and our clients and like how amazing they are. And they need to hear that from me more. And so that's an area as a leader that I'm wanting to develop, you know, that muscle myself. And so maybe that's an encouragement to another CEO, cause I think it's a lot more comfortable behind my laptop. Right. but like your team does need to hear from you. Like if I'm not going to tell them how awesome they are and like why what we do matters, like, you know, who's going to? So I think, and even like our associates and our seniors, sometimes like if you're doing lower level work, it's hard to connect that into the why, but it's like, we can't close books and do KPIs and do CFO work. We can't do any of that. If like our transactional data entry and our recons and our month close isn't tight, like what they do really matters and what our managers and controllers do matter. It's like, it's all so important. And so I do think that that's the CEO's job, is to tell that story. And I do it like in those quarterlies, but I don't think quarterly is enough. Like I think, and we have a wins channel in Teams. We share wins throughout like, you know, things that are going on. And we do client surveys. And so we share a lot of that feedback. So we try to share positive things throughout the quarter. But I still think that the leadership communication could always be more. I think it could always be more.
I just see your heart and your passion, Shannon, as a leader. I think they are so fortunate to have you. And I love that you're, you know, focused on bringing more of that to your team and recognizing them. I can't believe we're already almost out of time, but as we wrap up, I'm curious if there's anything for other founders that may be listening in any industry who want to build an intentional culture from scratch. Where do they start? What would you tell them to avoid?
I would start with the clarity around just defining your standards early and writing them down and communicating them right out of the gate. And we were such baby entrepreneurs, like we had no idea. So if you would have asked me like, what are your standards? I would have been like, huh, like, I don't really know. And so really thinking about like, what are the standards that we want here? Cause really for us, it was a year or two in where we kind of were trying to backtrack and like build these things. And I also think by then we had some experience to know even what we were trying to do and what standards we wanted. But I think defining the standards, writing them down, communicating them clearly. And then next, you really have to build systems sooner than you think you need them, because a lot of your systems and project management and deadlines and reporting is where a lot of that measurement comes from to encourage the team around if they're winning, not winning. And so we waited too long to build some of those systems. And in hindsight, it's easy. It's like you're so busy trying just to get work out the door and getting everything done, which is very overwhelming. So the time to like build a system just feels overwhelming and daunting. And so in hindsight, like talking to my younger self, it would have been like set aside a time to like build these things earlier, because we started building a lot of that framework when our team was like 20, 30 people. And it's kind of like putting toothpaste back in a tube. Like it's pretty hard to do. Cause then it was like, oh, now we're building systems and templates and accountability and all these things that we didn't have clearly before. So that's tough. And for a lot of people that feels like a big organizational shift too, where it's like, they felt like the accountability in the org was changing. Like it wasn't as, almost like family friendly or family oriented in some ways, because we didn't start with that level of accountability and then we were trying to put it in later. So that's a very long winded answer to your question. But I really think like the sooner you set the standards and hold that line, the better, because if you don't, and then you do it when there's 20 people, they're like, oh, like, why do we have all these standards now? We didn't have these before. And this isn't where, you know, it's not the same. It feels like you kind of gave them whiplash in a way, because you're like, oh, I'm really serious about this now. And they're like, well, you weren't last year. So I think that it really has to be from the onset that there's things that you, kind of hold that line. And so, culture too, it comes from there's a book. It's, about boundaries for leaders. It's like a Dobson book, highly recommended, but it's basically like in your business, you either get what you allow or what you tolerate, or you get what you create. And for me, that was like a light bulb moment, because you're the leader. It's like, you're not a victim. None of it's happening to you. And so I think owners have to think about like, I am getting what I've either allowed or I'm getting what I create. And so hold the line, like, don't allow it. Like if follow through and meeting deadlines is important and you're letting everyone do everything late all the time and you're not, you know, disciplining or having any hard conversations, like you now have a culture where getting things done late is okay because you've allowed it. And so I think we have to take that stuff seriously. Like if it matters, it has to matter. And that's okay too. You don't have to apologize for having standards in your own business. I think sometimes we feel bad. Like I feel bad that I want things done on time. It's like, why? That's okay. And honestly, A players, they want to work at a company that gets things done on time too. And I know that's just an example, but, I think that owners struggle with conviction around having their standards. Like we apologize for having standards and I don't think we should. It protects the company. Like the organization needs to have standards. And A players want an organization with standards.
Invaluable wisdom, Shannon. Awesome. Thank you so much. And if somebody wants to work with Badger, how can they find you?
BadgerCPA.com is our website. And we're very heavy in the outsourced accounting and fractional controller and CFO space. So we love working with high compliance environments like cost accounting, construction, engineering, nonprofit, government contractors. So we like to stay sort of in that high complexity accounting space. That's really our sweet spot. It's super fun work. But yeah, if anybody wants to reach out, we would love to hear from them. They can go to our website and just submit a contact form there, or they can email me directly. It's just shannon.badger@badgercpa.com.
Awesome. We'll put all of that in the show notes. It's been such a great conversation, Shannon. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you being
having here. Me. Thank you so much, Wendy. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. There were so many great takeaways in this conversation. Culture isn't just about what we say we value, but it's about the systems, the expectations, and behaviors that we consistently reinforce inside our organizations. If you'd like to learn more about Shannon and the team at Badger CPA, you can visit badgercpa.com, and we'll include that link in the show notes along with Shannon's contact information. And if this episode resonated with you and you're thinking more intentionally about the culture inside your organization, I'd love to continue this conversation with you as well. You can learn more about my work helping leaders operationalize their culture through the Core Culture Framework on my website, and I'll include that link in the show notes as well. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, share it with another leader who cares about building a great workplace, and leave a review. It helps more leaders find these conversations. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.